So a couple of things I would like to mention. Some of the sits that we do will be rather long. It's okay during a sit if you want to stand in place. If you have some discomfort in your body, that's okay. It's also okay, as far as I'm concerned, if you sit on chairs. I don't know, how do you usually, do you have chairs available to people also? In the back of the hall. So if you need to sit on a chair because it's uncomfortable to sit too long on the floor, that's fine. And as I say, anytime, you don't have to wait to the bell. If you want to stand in place to relieve some physical discomfort, that's okay, because as I say, some of the periods are rather long. Now, another thing that always becomes a challenge is sleepiness, if you get sleepy. Well, you know, the word Buddha in Sanskrit means awake, okay? It means awake. So it's very important to try to remain alert. So on the other hand, inevitably, we get sleepy. So what to do? One thing you can do to help you overcome sleepiness is stand in place. You just stand up and you do your meditation standing. That helps wake up the brain. Another thing you can do if you're seated to help be more alert is to stretch your spine up, because when your spine is straight, that wakes up your brain. The posture sensors in your spine are linked to your the general alertness of the brain. There's actually a neural circuit called the reticular activating system. And when your posture is straight, that stimulates that system to physiologically wake the brain up. Conversely, if your posture wilts, if your posture goes like this, then you're going to get more sleepy. So as soon as you find that your posture is going down, you have to sort of force yourself back up and then settle in. Another thing that you can do to help keep you awake is meditate with your eyes open. That also wakes up the brain. Now, we've been focusing so far on one restful quality, which is relaxation, the stillness of the posture. There's a book, a famous book, called Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. It's by a Japanese Zen master named Suzuki. Some of you might have read that book. That book is based on Soto Zen. In Japan, there are two kinds of Zen. One is called Rinzai Zen, where they use koans, like the question, what is the sound of one hand? You might have heard that. It's a famous Zen question. Well, in Rinzai Zen, they ask those kinds of questions. But in Soto Zen, they do a practice that they call just sitting. That's their entire practice. You just sit. In Japanese, shikan taza. So when you first sit down, what's the very first thing you're aware of? When you just sit, you're aware that your body is physically relaxed in the posture. If you can keep an awareness of that for an entire sit, you're just aware of being relaxed in the posture, and you're not distracted into anything else, then you've had an experience of just sitting. So when sleepiness occurs, you get a wave of unconsciousness comes through you. But if you pay close attention, you'll see that with each wave of sleepiness, there also comes a wave of muscle relaxation. Your muscles actually relax a little bit when you experience sleepiness. Now, that's why people, if they get very sleepy, they start to do this, okay? Start to go like this. Okay? So, what causes this? What causes that is there's a wave of sleepiness. They go unconscious, but that wave of sleepiness also causes their body to relax. Now, if you're able to experience, this is subtle, I'll repeat this again. You may not understand what I'm saying the first time. You may need to hear this many times. Sleepiness comes in waves. It's strong, then it's weak, then it's strong, then it's weak. Each individual wave of sleepiness causes a wave of feel rest. The body, the muscles relax as the sleepiness passes through you. If you concentrate on that wave of relaxation, then you'll just go into a deeper state and you won't lurch forward. And you won't lose consciousness. Then the sleepiness will just take you into deeper and deeper restful states. But if you cannot detect the wave of relaxation of your muscles that comes with the wave of unconsciousness, then you'll go unconscious and your body will lurch. It will do this. So the trick is, it takes years, years to learn how to do this. But eventually you're going to learn how to recycle the sleepiness into deep meditation experience. And there are many ways to do, there are many aspects of that. One is, over and over again, straighten your spine. Every time your posture goes like this, force yourself back up. If need be, force your eyes open. Fight to keep alert, but also be aware that in some way the sleepiness, in a very subtle way, is an ally. It's a friend, because as the sleepiness comes over you, the body relaxes. If you focus on that relaxation, instead of going unconscious, you'll just drop into a deeper rest state. So these are some of the things you can do if sleepiness comes up. What else is going to come up? You're going to have physical discomfort sooner or later because we sit for long periods of time. So with the technique we're doing right now, which is focus on rest, feel rest. When you have physical discomfort, you just give it permission to be there, but you don't focus on the physical discomfort. And if you get pulled into the physical discomfort, you bring yourself back to the pleasant, restful quality in your body if you can. So that's how to deal with physical discomfort. You're going to have mental activity. You're going to have thoughts. That's okay. Don't need to get rid of them. But your attention is going with the technique we're doing now. Later on, we'll do other techniques. But just for now, if you have thoughts, let them occur. But don't intentionally focus on them. Don't try to suppress them. Just keep coming back to focusing on feel rest. So that's how to deal with some of the challenges that may come up. Now, we're starting with using mental labels. Mental labels are words or phrases that help you focus on a certain aspect of experience. Now, eventually, we'll be able to do the noting without having to make mental labels. But as a place to start, that's what we're doing. So the instruction was every few seconds, find either the relaxation in your limbs or find the relaxation on the out-breath. Focus on that and make a mental thought, feel rest. I'm going to teach you a labeling language, a kind of artificial language that allows, eventually, will allow you to quickly label any type of sensory experience. So we're going to create a special scientific vocabulary, and we'll use the word feel for body experience. And if it's a restful body experience, like physical relaxation or emotional peace or the experience that your body is not there, it's gone, anything that is in the body that's restful, our label for that will be feel rest. Right now, we're focusing primarily on the physical relaxation as a form of feel rest. So that's a little bit of a review of what we've done so far, and also how to deal with certain challenges that may come up in terms of pain, wandering thoughts, sleepiness, and so forth. So now I'd like to open it up. Does anyone have any questions on what we've done so far? And remember, I like to take questions, so you don't have to hesitate. I think I see a hand back there. Oh, you're going to need to talk much louder.
When I tell myself feel
worse,
it just makes me feel more like this
Oh, okay, very good. Okay. So the question is, I feel a lot of agitation. And when I make the mental label feel rest, that just makes the agitation worse. Okay. So, is any part of your body relaxed? Any part whatsoever?
Yeah, I tried to focus on it, but...
And what part was relaxed? What part of your body? There was a relaxation in your stomach area. And were you able to notice that... there's a little relaxation each time you breathe out. The way to notice the relaxation on the out-breath is by way of contrast. When you breathe in, your muscles work. They have to work to breathe in. You have to raise the rib cage. Then the breathing out is passive. It's not active. Those muscles just relax. So how many people were able to experience at least a little bit that the out-breath is relaxing? Raise your hand. Okay, excellent. So you were able to detect some relaxation. Could you also notice that because you're still, maybe your arms were relaxed or your face was a little longer or your jaw was loose? Could you?
Tense.
Okay. But I understand that non-rest, okay? Non-rest was much more intense than rest. But my question is, were you able to detect, find some rest even while that was happening? Yes, it's stronger, so it pulls your attention. Okay. Now, as long as you do two things, you are doing it perfectly. The first thing is try to come back to the restful state. Even though it's not very strong, okay, you try to bring your attention back to it. That's number one. Number two, to the best of your ability, allow for the non-rest to be there. Just give it permission. Say, okay, it's okay to be agitated. It's okay to be tense and uncomfortable. That permission for non-rest to arise is the quickest way to work through the non-rest, okay, by not fighting with it. So as long as you try to let the non-rest be there, and as long as you're bringing your attention back to the restful state, you're doing the technique perfectly. You may not be comfortable. It may not be a pleasant experience for you. However, it is a productive experience. When you run up a steep hill, it doesn't seem like you're fast and you don't feel good because you're running up a steep hill. But you're actually getting strong. It just doesn't seem that way because you're working with a challenge. So when we focus on rest, inevitably non-rest will arise. If you simply give it permission to do that, then that it will be less and less of a problem for you. Okay? And I can go into more detail later on, but for now I would say just do your best. If you need to shift position or stretch or stand in place to help you, that's perfectly okay. You can do that. However, inevitably, sooner or later, we have to learn how to work with tension and agitation in our body. Sooner or later, it's going to come up. If we work with it this way, then it becomes less and less of a problem. Okay? So that's what I would tell you for now. There's more to say, more detail, more subtle levels of instruction. But for now, that would be my advice. Good. Other reports or questions? Yes.
Would you say that the field rest is by definition present?
Yes. Most people find that relaxation is by definition a pleasant experience. Now, it may not be a very intensely pleasant experience, but it is a pleasant experience. And therefore, the more you focus on it, the more pleasant it becomes, encouraging you to focus even more, and that creates a positive feedback loop that builds your concentration power. So the more concentrated you get on the rest, the more fun it is. The more fun it is, the easier it is to get concentrated on the rest. So that's what we're working with now. Now, if you look at the manual that I sent you, you'll see that focus on rest is only one of five techniques. So it's not the only way to develop mindfulness. If the non-rest is too intense, then you may have to focus on that. Okay, so there are other strategies, other ways to develop mindfulness. But for now, this is the one we're doing. And for this one, the rest is pleasant and you're encouraged to enjoy it, even if it's not very strong relative to the other things. Good. Other questions or reports? Yes.
My question is going to sound like a beginner's question. But I felt a lot of pain during the practice, and it made me go thinking that I may damage my back or my, like, that this is not healthy or something like that, and that took me way out of the restfulness.
Yes. That's a good question. There's a difference between sensory discomfort and objective damaging of your body, okay? You can go through very strong sensory discomfort and not be damaging your body. So we would definitely say, do not damage your body. So how can you know? Well, for one thing, if the pain continues after you get up from the posture and it still hurts for a half an hour or an hour, then probably you were sitting too much, okay? So the pain may be very intense, but if it's good pain or okay pain, it will disappear very quickly after you shift your posture. So if it disappeared as soon as you moved around or whatever, then you don't have to worry. You're not damaging your body. And also, that's why we give you the option that you can move anytime you want. But you can experience very intense pain that doesn't damage your body, and you can just sit through that. So I know, yeah, you start thinking, oh, I'm going to be crippled, I'm going to, you know, get a disease, and so forth. But the fact is that almost never happens. And if it does happen, it happens when a person sits for 2 or 3 or 4 hours, okay? And we're not going to sit that long. So it's unlikely you're going to actually damage your body. But you're going to worry about damaging your body. And then when that happens, just for now, come back to the restful state. But if you're really worried, then just stand in place, relax, and that's okay too. Then you know for sure you're not damaging your body. Yes?
I have a kind of 2 questions, but more of the same.
Yes.
Would you say it's what we just did is like practicing anapana in different traditions? And also, there's always the point of equanimity. So if we're practicing something very pleasant, doesn't it necessarily mean attachment towards very positive experience?
Okay, very good. So the question is, there were 2 questions, and I will explain the questions because you might not know the vocabulary. So the question was, well, we're focusing on these restful states wherever they may be in the body. Is that not in some ways like anapana or anapanasati, just sort of done with a different object? That was your question. So if you're not familiar with this term, in the Pali language, which is one of the ancient languages of India, and the language of Theravada Buddhism, which is where this practice comes from. In Pali, the word anapanasati, sometimes abbreviated to anapana, means to be mindful of your breathing. And a lot of mindfulness teachers have you initially work with the breath, or maybe exclusively work with the breath. We're not doing that this time. Sometimes I do that with people. But the question, well, and the instruction for anapana is focus on the breath sensation, maybe here or maybe here, and when your attention wanders, come back to the breath. So from that perspective, yes, it's the same general idea, except in this case, you're focusing on either locally or globally on just sitting, on the sense of being pleasantly reposed in the posture. But to the extent that I said, when your attention gets pulled away, come back to the relaxation, then that's similar to the anapana instruction. Now, was that sufficient for the first question? Or is that what you were asking with the first question? Okay. Now the second question, I said the relaxation is by nature pleasant, so that more you focus on the relaxation, the more that motivates you to focus more. And so a very natural question was, well, wouldn't there be a danger in that because you're going to develop an attachment to a pleasant sensation? So this is actually a very deep question. The issue is in one's relationship to the pleasure. Having pleasant experiences when you meditate can be a good thing or a bad thing, depending on your attitude towards the pleasure. If your attitude towards the pleasure is equanimity, meaning that you let the pleasure come and go without holding on, but also without suppressing it, then the pleasure will turn into satisfaction, and it will not turn into drivenness. But if you experience a pleasure in the opposite way, if you don't just let it come and go, if moment by moment there's some grasping and so forth, then it will have the opposite effect. So that the Buddha actually said it was a good thing to experience pleasure when you meditate. If you experience that pleasure with equanimity, then that pleasure will purify consciousness. So equanimity means just let the sensation come and go. So when you have an unpleasant sensation and you experience it with equanimity, that works through your aversions and your hatreds. When you have a pleasant sensation and you experience it with equanimity, that works through the craving. So that actually the pleasure itself will not necessarily become a craving. And in fact, if you can have pleasure without the craving, that will deepen your practice, and that's the whole idea. So in early Buddhism, if you read the descriptions of enlightenment in the at the beginning of the Buddhist canon, the first few suttas, what they basically describe is going into very deep blissful states and then seeing beyond that bliss. But first you go to bliss, and then you sort of penetrate the bliss into void or nothing or no self. And that's actually the classic path. So I'm teaching you these restful, pleasant states, but we're not just going to be using them as a concentration. We're going to develop sensory clarity until we see that the restful states are just vibrating space. And then that leads to a transcendence of time and space, and the self goes away. Okay? So, yeah, that's okay. I know that was a lot of information. This is like a science, and I would like to teach it all to you in one night. But if you learn science, you'll remember in your science class, you have to hear the same thing over and over again. At first it makes a little sense, then it makes more sense, then it makes more sense, because it took great minds centuries to formulate the what is in even a high school textbook on physics, and even a beginning textbook on calculus. That took 300 years of the finest mathematical intellects of the world to formulate the definition of a derivative or an integral in calculus. So you know, okay, if it took all those centuries to formulate this, maybe I'm going to have to come back to it over and over again. But if I'm patient, eventually it will make sense. So I know I'm presenting you with a lot of information. The points are very subtle, some of them. And we also have the fact it's a foreign language. So just be patient and it will sink in with time, I would say. Yes?
Can you repeat the few last sentences that you gave as an answer about vibrating space?
Yes. Now, this is a very advanced question, but I brought it up, so I guess I have to blame myself. The restful states. Yes. Can I repeat the question? Well, I made a very strange statement that we're going to ride these restful states into something that is beyond rest, or something that might be called absolute rest. These restful states that we're exploring now, I call them relative rest. It's a kind of shalom in your body, a kind of shalom visual, a kind of shalom that's auditory. But there is a deeper shalom that is not visual, not auditory, and not somatic. Well, where would that be? Poetically, everybody listening carefully, poetically, metaphorically, we would have to say that that deeper rest that is not part of the senses and is outside of time and space, that deeper rest is, do I dare say, shalom bimromav? That's divine rest, okay? As you're paying attention to relative rest, you'll start to notice that the relative rest is sort of made up of waves, and each one of those waves comes to an end. And each one of those endings is bitul hayesh, the annihilation of the somethingness of self and world. That's the term used in Kabbalah. But the word used in Buddhism is nirvana, cessation, okay? So as you're paying attention to the relative rest, you may start to notice moments of absolute rest. And we're going to ride the, okay, we'll start with relative. If you can only get a little bit of relative rest, you're doing great. But the classic path, as described in the early Buddhist scriptures, is you get relative rest, and then you see that the relative rest is anicca, it's impermanent. And it's rising, passing, and then it's just passing. And with it, you and the world are pulled into something that is outside of time and space. The word in Sanskrit, nirvana, it means both to cease, but it also means to be completely and finally and fully satisfied. It means that as a single concept, a linked concept. So we're going to start with some pleasant relative restful states. Some of you may experience something beyond feel rest, see rest, hear rest. Something beyond your senses completely. That's outside of time and space. And that would be the source. Okay? So, anyway, that's what I was talking about. Yes, in the back.
I was really struck in this that the physical knowledge and relationship between equanimity and grasping. That the grasping would come up, and if I focused on that, then there was more pain or more anxiety. And the minute I let the equanimity just move through me and say, this is natural, this is what's supposed to be, it would keep going. And I know that intellectually, but I was so struck by how I had a different sense of knowing it physically.
Yes, you experienced it directly in your senses. Equanimity is one of the three characteristics of mindful awareness, as I like to define it. Equanimity, however, is very difficult to explain to people. You just have to sort of experience it. Equanimity is a kind of permission for your senses to do whatever they want to do. It's not permission for the world to be any way it can be, okay? We can interfere with the objective world. We should sometimes. But unfortunately, we have a habit of interfering with our own sensory experience. Most people are not aware of that. We don't, and it's not just pain. We interfere with pleasure. Pleasure arises and we may tense around the pleasure. Pleasure wants to pass and we might not let it pass. Pain arises, we resist the arising. Pain arises, we may actually hold on to the pain, even though it's uncomfortable. It's habitual to push and pull on our sensory experience. As you sit here, minute after minute, hour after hour, day after day, every once in a while, spontaneously, you'll just drop into a state where you're not interfering anymore. It just happens. It happens spontaneously. But because we're in, remember I said we're in a simple environment? Because we're in a simple environment, there's nothing to distract you. So when you spontaneously fall into a state of equanimity, you notice it. That's what happened to you. You noticed that your mind and body spontaneously, for whatever reason, just dropped into a deeper openness. You also noticed that when that happened, there was a reduction of suffering. Even though the pain was the same, it was less of a problem. What changed? Your relationship to the pain. When you have pleasure and you drop into equanimity with the pleasure gives you more satisfaction. When you have pain and you drop into equanimity with the pain causes less suffering, less problem. This is happening in daily life all the time, but we're distracted, so we never notice it. When we come to the simple environment of a retreat, when this happens, we notice. And when we notice, then it happens more. And that begins a feedback device that will allow you to go deeper and deeper into equanimity. So that's what already happened to you, and we've just been here for an hour. So that's excellent. Yes.
I did feel relaxed and pleasure, and there is something that when I get into this more relaxed zone, light feeling, there can be sort of fear of like the unknown or like losing my mind or getting insane. Or, you know, so I just noticed it arising sometimes.
Absolutely. As we go into deeper states, it is very common that people experience fear. Now, depending on your technique, you can work with that fear in different ways. But I will say it is a common experience, commonly reported. In fact, if someone says, I was meditating and I dropped into a deep state, and then, by the time they say, and then, I will bet 50-50, they're going to say, and then I got afraid. Okay, it's that common. So what to do if you go, see, there's two problems with meditation. Either it doesn't work, or it does work. if it doesn't work, it's like, oh, I'm wasting my time. I'm just sleepy and stray thoughts, and I'm just uncomfortable. And so that's a problem. If it does work, you're not sleepy, you don't have stray thoughts, you drop into very deep states, and it's strange. And you wonder, am I going to die? Am I going to come back? Okay. And fear arises. So it's challenging either way. If it doesn't work, it can be challenging. But if it does work, it's going to start to take you into that thing that I said in Kabbalah is called Bitul HaYesh. Okay? Now, you don't have to fear Bitul HaYesh, because that's the same as going back to the source. Okay? You're dropping into the source, where consciousness comes from. But until you experience that, there'll be that fear, oh, what's going to happen to me? So depending on your technique, you can work with the fear in different ways. If you're doing a certain technique where you're observing your thoughts and emotions, which I call that technique focus in, it's described in my manual, then you can simply focus on the fear itself. Until it just flows and is not a problem. But if you're doing this technique, then you just ignore it. You have equanimity with the fear, but you keep coming back to the rest. Eventually, the fear goes away because you come to realize that you're not dying. You're simply dropping into a no-self. That's why Bitul HaYesh, okay? You're dropping into a no-self state. Which is a state of freedom, because the state of no self is also the state of everyone is myself. There's no outside, no inside. So your fear goes away. So you can say that there's a fence that separates ordinary experience from enlightenment. That fence is called fear. And you eventually learn how to go through that fence to what's on the other side.